Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Welcome to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast, bringing you the latest updates from the world of sports, gambling, and pop culture. Because you can't have a show without hot takes or a Tiger King meme these days. Know what I'm saying? Now, with over 200 episodes and ready to get after it again, here's your host, Dwayne Callender.
Hello, and thank you for joining me. We are going to be talking Masters coverage. Seems a quick turnaround given everything that's gone on since November, but obviously this is the more traditional time for the Masters, right after the NCAA tournament, which wrapped up last night. And, you know, just a brief aside as to the NCAA tournament, you know, all things considered, great tournament. I know everyone was looking forward to the final, but a couple of things that I don't think people were really accounting for between Gonzaga and Baylor was the fact that Baylor was considered the best team in the country at the beginning of the year before they ran into their own shutdown issues for COVID protocols, and they kind of tailed off in the middle part of the season. But you know, in the beginning part of the year, Baylor not only had one of the top offense in the league, but also was pretty up there in the defensive rankings. And then their defense started to tail off in the middle part of the year, which is why there were some concerns about Baylor coming into the tournament, was the fact that they weren't playing any defense necessarily in the Big 12. And they weren't nearly as efficient as they had been on offense. So, you know, that was the knock on them. But they were able to kind of turn it around in the tournament. And as you saw, as things progressed, they really were a class above the other teams that they were facing. And even Gonzaga ran into some issues where I think in a neutral setting like that, I think Gonzaga definitely wins at least 50% of the time. But, you know, when you combine a couple of factors, namely being the fact that Gonzaga had that thrilling overtime win over UCLA, you got some tired legs. I mean, they put up a number of shots. They scored over 90 points, played OT, you know, a less than 48-hour turnaround. You know, you're going to have tired legs, and I just don't think people accounted for that enough. And the betting lines, you know, having Gonzaga favored by 4.5, you know, I didn't agree with it. I just didn't want to go too aggressively on that game, so I wasn't taking that much action on it. But I definitely felt as though the line really, you know, was giving a little bit too much respect to Gonzaga on the body of their work, rather than what we actually saw is the fact that they had a very grueling game in the Final Four, whereas Baylor cruised in the final in their matchup against Houston, had fresh legs. And, you know, on a team composition standpoint, was just as good, if not better than Gonzaga. You know, that's on a neutral court. That makes it very hard to take Gonzaga as a favorite. That was more of a dog position. But, you know, you try not to side against the undefeated team in the championship game. So, you know, I could see where the public money was coming in on Gonzaga. But, you know, realistically, there was opportunity there if you wanted to side with Baylor to be had, in my opinion. But overall, fantastic tournament. You know, given everything that the NCAA had kind of worked on, you know, you could criticize them for a number of things, but they did work very hard to keep teams in a good position. So I have to give them credit there. Obviously, when it comes to the NCAA and money, they were not going to be soon departed with it for another year. So, you know, the safety protocols did have some monetary attachments that were the driving factors in terms of how things were run. But, you know, obviously there were a number of issues brought up between the comparison of the men's tournament and the women's tournament, which I'll get into because, you know, at the end of the day, it is a monetary issue when it comes to the NCAA. So stay tuned for that. So I'll kind of go through the financial numbers that, you know, you see bandied about with collegiate athletics compared to professional sports. So we're going to go into some of the context there. NCAA says they're going to do better in terms of the representation between both tournaments. I have high doubts about that. But as I said, stay tuned for that. We'll have some more coverage on that in a future episode. So without much further ado, let's get into the Masters. And, you know, obviously we had the Masters delayed until November. And the course played differently because of the timing and weather-wise. It was very rainy at that point in the year in at Augusta National in Georgia. So you had a very different course layout in terms of the greens. And, you know, for those of you who don't know, Augusta National, probably the most famous golf course in the world at this point, and golf's biggest major being the Masters, and the winner receiving the green jacket, which is essentially the highest prize of them all, just because of how prestigious it is for professional golfers. So everyone is gunning for a green jacket, even if you have one. You know, winning multiple green jackets, I mean, that's pretty much a lock for Hall of Fame status for a golfer. But even getting one is a tremendous career accomplishment. So, you know, it's a long course. You know, it's 3,400 yards in total. You know, par 72. You know, the course does not change. It is very tricky. You've got a number of areas where, you know, the greens can play very fast. That was not the case in November because of the weather and the rain. You know, it definitely played much slower. You know, as much as they can dry out the golf course, it was very, the weather conditions just made it a very different golf course, which kind of made it more of a Bombers golf course. So the defending champion this year is Dustin Johnson. You know, obviously he won it in November. You know, in terms of Dustin Johnson's game right now, it's not in a good spot, to be honest. He's struggled in the last couple of months to kind of regain his normal form. And, you know, pricing wise, he's basically at the top of the tier on both DraftKings and FanDuel. He's 11,500 on DraftKings, to over 12,000 on FanDuel. And, you know, it makes it very difficult to actually play Dustin Johnson. I know he won here in November, but his form isn't there. And, you know, the price tag is going to stem down ownership just because of, you know, how many other options you could go to instead of Dustin Johnson. But, you know, I'm not going to necessarily cross him out of my player pool just yet, but I am going to be underweight with the field. You know, some of the projections for his ownership is going to be near 15%, and I just can't see myself playing. You know, I'm going to be mass entering tournaments and, you know, give him overall player exposures. I just can't see myself rostering that many lineups that has Dustin Johnson at that price tag in there. You know, in terms of approach, T.D. Green game, I just look at some of the golfers that would be able to take advantage of this course. And Dustin Johnson obviously is near the top of the list, you know, when he's on. It's just, you know, it's very hard to make that call at the moment of can he get it done and how much you're going to play him. Like I said, I think I'm going to end up being underweight, but I wouldn't be outright taking him out of my player pool just yet. Next player that is going to be interesting to talk about here is John Rahm. Everything in John Rahm's game sets up for a great week at Augusta. Issue with John Rahm is the fact that his wife is due to deliver the baby any day now, and he's already set on record that even if he's leading the tournament, he's going to witness the birth of his child. So the narrative here and is, you know, he could be doing great, but, you know, the baby's coming, and he's going to be out of there. As great as his off the tee game can be and his putting can be, you know, it's a very risky proposition playing John Rahm at the moment. 11,000 on DraftKings, 11,700 on FanDuel. If you're doing DFS scoring, you need your golfer to A, make the cut, but B, finish out the week, to be in any serious contention. And, the Rahm news is you're really rolling the dice there that his game's going to hold up. He's not going to be distracted. You know, again, this is all outside forces. You know, on a normal Masters tournament, Rahm is a fantastic play, no matter the price tag. Given his current form, you know, his performance should be well up there. I mean, he's finished inside the top 10 his last three visits to Augusta. So again, there's nothing wrong with Rahm outside of we just don't know personally if he's going to be able to be invested this entire week. And, you know, that's where the concern lies with Rahm. So we'll see how his ownership plays out as we head into Thursday, Thursday morning when lineups lock. But I would not be surprised to see Rahm, you know, really start coming down in ownership, because as of right now, he's over 25, expect to be over 25% owned in lineups. You know, maybe folks are willing to risk roll the dice or just didn't know about the baby news. There carries a lot more risk with Rahm than what his ownership estimates would indicate. Bryson DeChambeau, 10,800 on DraftKings, 11,900 on FanDuel. Listen, with Bryson, you know, he won the Players Championship. He won the Arnold Palmer. He won the U.S. Open last season. You know, Bryson has just been on a tear this past year. With Bryson, it's all about the driver game and how far he can hit the boomstick. It's really that simple with Bryson. You know, obviously he's going to, approach the game from a scientific way of how and when he can hit the ball as hard as he possibly can. If you've never seen Bryson DeChambeau play, it is something to watch, because golf purists will decry that he's causing a difference for a stark departure from the way the game is normally played. Bryson's very much about the analytics and how he can attack par fives, and it uses his ability to gain distance to his maximum advantage. And, you know, I think he can get it done at Augusta. You know, it hasn't happened yet, but, you know, one of these years, he's going to figure out, you know, even with the elevation of the greens, you know, how best to attack this golf course. And, you know, once he puts it together, look out, he has the tools to be able to dominate Augusta the way Tiger used to be able to do it in his prime. So, you know, it's definitely something to kind of keep an eye out for with Bryson. So Bryson's definitely in my player pool. I don't know if he's going to be in my main lineup just yet, because there certainly carries a lot of risk for Bryson to not make the cut at Augusta. You know, he's very much an all or nothing kind of play, but given his form right now, it's hard to kind of look past Bryson, given the questions we do have about Dustin Johnson and John Rahm. Justin Thomas, 10-6 on DraftKings, 11,800 on FanDuel. You know, I think, you know, with Justin Thomas winning the Players Championship, even though he was being chased down by Bryson, I just think that, you know, Thomas has just been up and down. So, yes, he won the Players, but coming into the Players, he was having a lot of issues with his finishing in certain tournaments. And, you know, JT has great history at Augusta. The issue with Thomas usually ends up being in a major, will the putter hold up? You know, he's... He finished fourth in November. You know, again, those were with slower greens, so the putting wasn't nearly as much of an issue. But, you know, it's hard to kind of look past Justin Thomas. You know, there's nothing in this game that would indicate that you could be concerned about him making a cut, which, again, makes him an extremely popular play. So that's where... you may end up having to make a decision on him, is if he ends up being the most popular top golfer, you know, does it make sense rostering him? I think it does. You know, I can see the argument, as to why you would avoid, Thomas if he gets too popular, the way the projections are kind of leaning towards with over 30% ownership. All right, next up, here's someone I'm fading absolutely. I don't care. We got Rory McIlroy at 10,200, 11,400 on FanDuel. Listen, it's been a while for Rory where we felt really good about his game. You know, he's looked good in parts, but a lot of these major tournaments, he's been kind of in that also-ran category. And, you know, at his price tag, I want the win equity if I'm going to be paying up at this price range. And I just don't see it with Rory at the moment being having the willingness to close. So I will be taking Rory out of my player pool this week. And if he beats me, he beats me. There's going to be another popular name that I'll be taking out as well, but I just don't see it with Rory's current form. Xander Schauffele, you know, 10,000 on DraftKings, 11,300 on FanDuel. Xander, you know, the game has not necessarily been there. Talent certainly is there. He did finished second 2 years ago. So he's got good course history. It's just right now, Xander hasn't been in great form. And, you know, when you have to start making decisions, I'm going to have to wonder, you know, where Xander falls into the mix for me. So definitely something I'd be keeping in mind of. Patrick Cantlay, 9,800 on DraftKings, 11,100 on FanDuel. You know, he's finished inside the top 20 twice in the last three trips of at Augusta. You know, I would say that missing the cut at the Players Championship was a bit of a concern. It definitely killed my DFS lineups having as much exposure to Cantlay as I did. So, you know, I might be slightly reticent to throw him into my main lineup, but I do think that Cantlay is in far better form than Xander at the moment. So, if I were given a choice between the two, I'd take Cantlay. I think his ownership is going to be a bit depressed this week. Next up, Jordan Spieth, and another one of my main fades for the week. He's 9,400 on DraftKings, 10,900 on FanDuel. Listen, Spieth is going to be one of the popular picks that everyone's going to gravitate towards. He won at the Valero tournament this past weekend. He's been in contention the past three tournaments, and he closed one out, obviously, over the weekend. You know, I know Spieth has excellent course history at Augusta, and, you know, when he's on the tee to green game, you know, basically, he's almost second to none. Overall, so it's not a matter of does he have the ability to do well. It's just with Spieth, he can get into such a cold spell in relatively short order that I'm wondering if rolling the dice is worthwhile. And, you know, I just think that with the public going to be so heavily on Spieth, I think I can gain a little bit more leverage by just fading him outright rather than, you know, being underweight and having some exposure to him. I think doing the outright fade makes the lineups already different by limiting the pool. So, you know, I'm going to be fading Spieth. And, you know, almost a similar story with Patrick Reed and Brooks Koepka. So Reed is 9,300 on DraftKings, 10,800 on FanDuel. Koepka, 9,200 on DraftKings, 11,600 on FanDuel. So Reed is in pretty good form, and, you know, he's definitely been in the mix at Augusta over the past couple of years. So with Reed's game, it's a lot of just mechanics wise. If he's in good form, you know, you should feel fine about rostering him. I just don't necessarily see myself doing it. Again, sometimes it kind of comes down to the overall ownership and how popular certain folks are expected to be. And with his win, I definitely expect Spieth to be amongst the most owned golfers in general and kind of go from there. So, you know, want to get a little bit different from the rest of the pack. And so I'll be kind of leaning towards cutting out Reed entirely. Brooks, on the other hand, you know, recovering from knee surgery and not that long ago, you know, within the past month and a half, you know, he's back out at the golf course hitting balls again. You know, I'm curious to see if the knee surgery is going to play a role. I think trying to force the issue by having having Koepka in your lineup, you know, if you're going to play Koepka, you're going to have countermeasures and pivot towards if things look as though, you know, he can't complete the tournament. You know, obviously your overall tournament lineup would be dead with a withdrawal, but, you know, even with trying to win a tournament, you know, you don't know how much practice time he's gotten. So it makes it a bit of a tough call. You know, I think it's either you're going to be, you know, 15-20% ownership in your player pool with Brooks, or you don't play him at all. I just feel as though you're going to need to be a little bit more aggressive, especially for the Millie Maker tournament, playing Brooks. I don't have a problem with that at all, but just be prepared to get questioned about the status of Brooks Koepka throughout the week. So I would say, you know, you don't have to cross him out of your player pool, but be very cautious that it could blow up on you. So, you know, you just got to be prepared of how many lineups you're willing to have die because of Brooks withdrawing from the contest. Tony Finau, 9,100 on DraftKings, 10-7 on FanDuel. You know, Finau has played extremely well at the Masters. I know I keep saying that with these top guys, but that's why they're in the top tier range, because of how well they've been able to perform over the last couple of years. And, you know, with Finau, it just kind of comes down to, if he's in position to win a tournament, will he actually show the mettle and the resolve to get it done? You know, it's a reasonable question to ask, because we've seen Tony come up short in round four when he's got championship aspirations online. So curious to see how Finau pans out, but you know, his tee to green game is elite, and I am still not sure whether or not I'm going to be that heavily on Finau this week, but he's definitely in consideration for the player pool. Webb Simpson, 9,000 on DraftKings, 10-5 on FanDuel. You know, missed the cut at the Players Championship, but last three trips to Augusta, tied for 10th, tied for 5th, and tied for 20th. So you have a case where, you know, golfer wants to play. There's a prepared stance on Webb that he can compete in tournaments where you don't have all the big names out there. But when it comes to larger, more prestigious tournaments like this, which is a major, and others, you know, you're just not getting that same kind of lift as you would with some of these other more expensive golfers that have won more consistently against excellent competition. So that's the concern about Webb, is, you know, he may be an also-ran, but not necessarily a serious contender to win the tournament. And to kind of cap off the elite pricing tier, we've got Colin Morikawa, 9,600 on DraftKings. FanDuel pricing at just over 11,000. You know, I have a tough time going with Colin just because, you know, recent form hasn't been the best. But it's tough because, you know, he has so many good qualities, but the issue that I've seen crop up is the putter. And with the Masters, you do need to be able to make putts. And that's where I'm looking at it. It's like, you know, if I'm playing Morikawa at 11,000 on FanDuel or 9,600 on DraftKings, I would almost say, you know, let me just try to find the extra couple hundred bucks on FanDuel, or if it's DraftKings, just find $1,000 to get up to Justin Thomas, because I'd be getting the same exposure. Now, I'm sure some folks would make the counter argument of, you know, why am I paying up for Justin Thomas where I know he's got questionable putting, but, you know, even though he's got excellent course history, let me just trade down to get Morikawa. And it's just, you know, again, I kind of value the course history and kind of knowing where some of the breaks are versus just pure skill set alone. So Morikawa, I'm also going to be taken out of my player pool. Next up in this next round of pricing tiers, so about 9,000 and below type of players, you know, it's going to be headlined by Lee Westwood, whom is an automatic fade for me. You know, Westwood, yes, he has course history at Augusta, but man, Westwood really until the last 2 months had been in terrible form. I know he's on an incredible hot streak, but I don't see it continuing through the Masters. You know, I think it's already reached that point where his game, he's still trying to figure it out again after everything clicked. So I, you know, I'm just not going to be on Westwood this week. Same for Tyrrell Hatton. You know, it's harder to make the justifications given some of the names that I've seen come up over time. You know, I just don't necessarily see the value going with Hatton at 8,900 on DraftKings. You know, there just doesn't seem to be any worthwhile reason. You know, it's a little bit more of a reasonable play on FanDuel at 10-4 if you want to get off of Webb Simpson kind of territory, but you know, I just don't see the value in Hatton this week either. So I definitely see those two not being in my player pool. Victor Hovland, you know, has course history here, played as an amateur, and, you know, has been in great form this year. This is more of a all-around play as opposed to Morikawa, which is more let's try to win the tournament type of pick. Hovland, I, you know, definitely has potential to win the pick. He's 50. He's actually 35-1 odds to win the tournament. So he definitely has the backing of Vegas. It's just a matter of, you know, I think it's kind of a case of, you know, you're going to get a decent placement, a good shot selection, but not necessarily this is going to be the year where he puts it all together for an entire course to take down a major. So not necessarily going to be cutting Hovland out completely, but definitely going to be underweight on him. Sungjae Im, 8,600 on DraftKings, 10,000 on FanDuel. It is tempting to play him based off of what he did in November, but I'm not going there. You know, it was a different course. This is going to rely far more on putting. I don't necessarily see it with Sungjae. It's possible. I'm not going to put it past the guy given his talent, but I'm just don't think that's necessarily the best. This is the best spot for him. Daniel Berger, 8,500 on DraftKings, 10-3 on FanDuel. You know, top 10 finish at the Players, has made the cut at all three of his appearances. You know, definitely a cheaper option of what you'd be looking for in Webb Simpson. So in the player pool, it's just the biggest question would be, can he win a major? But, you know, it's not necessarily adverse to have him in your lineups, in my opinion. I think he's going to be able to put up solid numbers across the board. Next up, Hideki Matsuyama. You know, Hideki has not played well this year. It's no secret. He's been up and down. I missed Scotty Scheffler as well. I'll circle back with Scotty. Hideki, you know, ownership's going to be down. Price is down. This seems like in a large field tournament. So if you're playing the Millie Maker and you're playing, you know, 20 plus, 30 plus lineups, having exposure to Hideki makes a ton of sense. I'm just not sold on him being in my main lineup, but likely be underweight on him, but it definitely makes a ton of sense as a GPP target. Scotty Scheffler, you know, good player, excellent form. No complaints about him, but, you know, I think this is definitely a good spot to roster him. 8,400 on DraftKings. I would say Scheffler is in that kind of dark horse mix of players because, you know, he's the same price as Sungjae on FanDuel at 10K. Definitely flying under the radar this week in terms of players being discussed. So I think Scheffler makes a ton of sense as a GPP target, and I think he makes the cut. Cameron Smith, 8,200 DraftKings, 9,900 on FanDuel, you know, 50-1 odds. He has been playing great in terms of last couple of events. In his last couple of appearances, he's finished in the top five twice. So two top five finishes in the last three appearances at Augusta. You know, I think he's going to be in the mix. You know, I really don't have any qualms about playing Cameron Smith this week. You know, he played tremendously in November. Won me quite a bit of money by his play, to be honest. It's just, I think he, again, is well-suited for the course. I don't think putting is necessarily going to be an issue for him. So, you know, if you're looking, consider it at GPP lineup, but definitely have your exposure to Cameron Smith in there. And I would also throw in Matthew Fitzpatrick's name into the mix at 8,100 on DraftKings and 10,100 on FanDuel, mainly because, again, you know, excellent form this year. And Fitzpatrick has made his last five cuts at Augusta. You know, there's just nothing wrong with his game. And pricing wise, it makes a ton of sense. So, it's easier to get off of some of the more popular names because you've got these guys in the lower pricing tier that are in a nice sweet spot to put up points. So definitely trying to be measured in terms of how I feel about some of these guys, but I definitely feel as though the optimal lineup is going to have someone in this range, probably 2 to 3 players in this range to make it work from an optimal standpoint. So we'll see how it plays out, but I definitely think it's a real approach. A couple of guys that I'm not as keen on. We talked about, we talked about the fact that we were getting
so much value at some of these lower pricing points, but you know, kind of taking a step back, you got Harris English. You know, I have concerns about some of these players, like English, just health wise. How are they doing? You know, what was some of the rationale? Way more expensive on FanDuel, so definitely out of the player pool on FanDuel, but on DraftKings, 7,300. You know, it's a kind of a case where form's not great, but man, that price tag is so cheap that it's a very real possibility that the pricing tiers can be widely different. But in terms of his game, though, Harris English should work out. But, you know, I worry about the injury by the time he gets ready to play, you know, if they deem it worthwhile, if they are as far ahead as they are right now. It makes it a little bit of a tougher recommendation with Harris English. Next up, Tommy Fleetwood, 8,000 on DraftKings, 9,700 on FanDuel. You know, love Tommy, but the form just has not been there this year, and we're going to need to move in a different direction. So unless we see something, I think changes are going to be made sooner than later. So, you know, it definitely works from our standpoint that, you know, it makes far more sense to fade Fleetwood than trying to hope for a completely solid round of golf and no issues or hiccups to report. You know, I just think that he's going to play straight, and you know, that's probably the way to go. But usually, Fleetwood has that blow up hole that takes down an entire round, and then obviously keeps you out of running because he blew the flash and, you know, got nothing out of it. So I just look at Fleetwood as one of those shots in the dark. You know, definitely could work, but I can definitely see it backfiring spectacularly. So, yeah, that's just pretty much all I had to say about this range. And I'll cap it off with what to do about Sergio. So Sergio Garcia obviously won the Masters 2 years ago and has fallen off a cliff since. You know, it's one thing to play at Augusta for a number of years, but, you know, it's going to be interesting to see Sergio, because he struggled with this, being able to execute on some of these designs. You know, it's not the easiest task to make those updates, and, you know, at least they can take solace in knowing that, you know, for those who are brave enough to go out with Sergio, it's just one of those things where I think I'm going to play Sergio, but man, I don't feel comfortable playing him, and I'll leave it at that. It's just way too likely he can blow up, but got to take a shot at the price tag on DraftKings at a minimum. All right, so in this next group of golfers in the sub 8,000 range, you're going to need at least two of these guys to hit and to make your lineups work, in my opinion. And so, you know, with that in mind, you know, there are a lot of folks to go through in this group. And I'm not going to run down each and every one of them. You know, folks that I'm automatically going to be crossing off. Max Homa, Matthew Wolf, Francesco Molinari,
Just no interest. Same goes for Shane Lowry, Victor Perez, even though he had that run in the match play tournament 2 weeks ago. Just not going to be interested in these folks, to be perfectly honest. But the folks that I would be looking at, I want to go back to Paul Casey. Yes, he's burned me multiple times, but still, you know, Paul Casey has three top six finishes here at Augusta. You know, in his last couple of events, he's in good form. He's had all top 10 finishes. He's been solid, to be perfectly honest, for 2021. Obviously, the match play didn't work out, but, you know, that's a very different format than tournament. So I think Paul Casey really should be a staple in most lineups, and it makes a ton of sense. Adam Scott, I don't have interest in. I know the course history favors him. I'll probably be a little bit underweight on Scott. You know, he's a former winner of the Masters, so you can't discount that. Definitely going to be not looking to go too heavy on Scott. You know, he's projected to be about 10% ownership, but not exactly feeling great about it. The three guys that I would be looking to target would be Jason Day, Abraham Mancer, and Joaquin Niemann. All three of these guys are in that same price range of 75 to 7,400 on DraftKings. Day is 9,800 on FanDuel. Niemann, 9,600. Ancer is only 9K on FanDuel. He's pretty much a lock for me on FanDuel. But the tee to green game for all three of these guys work out quite well. Strokes gained on approach. All the stats favor these three players. So, you know, along with Casey, I'm probably going to have one of these three in the majority of my main build. I don't really see myself going too far outside the well in that regard, just because of their ability to make shots and also not lose that much with the putter. I think you're, as I said, you're likely going to have to get two guys in this sub 8K range, and, you know, below 7K, I think is dicey. So it's just a couple of dart throws that I will throw out for the sub 7K range. But, you know, the dart throws would be first and foremost Brian Harman. You know, never going to be a guy that's going to put up boffo numbers, but really solid. So he's 6,800 on DraftKings, 9,100 on FanDuel. Better play for the DraftKings format. FanDuel, I'm not as looking, not looking to do as much of a stars and scrubs approach on FanDuel. I think you got enough guys that are priced together that, you know, the bottom of FanDuel doesn't really do all that much this week. I think you're pretty much should be kind of sticking in that middle tier range rather than trying to go well below 9K. You know, Harman definitely has a nice floor, should be fine for cash games, GBPs. Might not have as much enough of an upside, but solid enough play that, you know, I won't hold it against anyone that goes that route. The guys I would be interested in for some upside in the sub 7K range would be Ryan Palmer. He's 6,500 on DraftKings, 8K on FanDuel. Number of good finishes coming into the Masters. And, he's made the cut here 2 out of 3 times. At this price range, you're just throwing it out there, trying to get some salary relief and hope, you make it through to the weekend and you get a top 20 finish when you're going this low. Matt Wallace, 6,400 on DraftKings, 8K on FanDuel. Again, you're hoping to try to make the cut at this price range. Matt Kuchar, 6,800 on FanDuel. He's had five finishes inside the top 12 at Augusta in the past. You know, recent form wasn't great until he had a good run at the match play 2 weeks ago. So I'm not as keen on Kuchar, but I can certainly understand why some folks would look in his direction. But the guy that I would be going towards, and I think he's been talked up a bit as well, looking at some of these ownership projections, would be Corey Connors at 6,900 and 8,900 on FanDuel. He's got tremendous ball striking ability. He's been on a great run last couple of tournaments. In terms of tee to green, he's in the top 5, as well as approach and off the tee. His putter, which was the weak part of his game, has been worked out for him. He's actually gained strokes with his putter. So realistically, he's on a hot streak right now, putting-wise. So I don't really see a ton of downside with Corey Connors. And again, when you're going down this low, usually it's to try to get some salary relief to fit in more studs at the top. So I don't have any problems with going at it with that approach. And even if you're just selecting Corey Connors outright, I don't have a problem with it going in that direction. So that's where I'm going to leave it in terms of the player pool this week. But just because I know we've covered quite a lot of ground here today, but you're going to need to make some decisive decisions with your player pool this week. And my takeaways would be, you could do one pump play under 7K, but I wouldn't go crazy over it. You should be looking at least two plays in this sub 8K range. And then from there on, you're going to be building out the rest of your roster accordingly from what I had discussed at the top. You're going to need to make some decisions. I'm going to be underweight on some of the top stars on tour just because you can't play everyone if realistically, even if you are playing 150 lineups, it's just not conducive long-term in terms of profitability to have your player pool that large to play everyone. So gonna need to make some decisions, but hopefully this was enough to kind of point you in a decent spot to kind of come to your own decision. So I will leave it there, but hopefully we have a wonderful tournament. The weather on Friday looks as though it could be kind of messy from a rain and wind perspective, so that could certainly cause some problems with the cut line. But, again, if it gets too egregious, they're going to hold up play for the Masters. They don't want the weather to dictate how the tournament results go. So again, it's one of those areas where they can dry out the course quickly as long as the inclement weather doesn't linger too long in the system. So we'll see how it plays out, but
definitely an interesting tournament, to say the least, given the turnaround. I think the course plays far differently than it did in November, so I would actually be looking closer towards a guy like Bryson this week in terms of how hot he's been playing, just the approach of the game. You know, Bryson can win the tournament or finish well outside of the cut line. It really is that wide of a range in terms of how it could play out. So again, in terms of some of the winners, I think we could see here. I like Bryson at 11-1. I'll also would be curious about the likes of Daniel Berger at 35-1, Cameron Smith at 50-1, even a Matthew Fitzpatrick at 40-1. You know, they have the game to actually compete and do well at the Masters. So again, I wouldn't necessarily think it's all going to be concentrated with the top players. So we shall see, but hopefully it's a lovely tournament again this year, and hopefully we can get some winners out of some of the lineups that'll be coming from this. So that's all for now. Have a good one, folks. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Throwdown Podcast. Be sure to like and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and all other major outlets.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.